On February 13, 1979, Anders Behring Breivik was born in Oslo, Norway, a date that would later mark the beginning of a devastating narrative, culminating in the country's darkest day. What makes the story of Norway's worst terrorist attack so haunting isn't just the 77 lives lost, but how it forces us to confront an unsettling truth. Extremism isn't always foreign or distant. Sometimes it emerges from within the fabric of even the most peaceful societies. As Barack Obama noted when praising this account, this is a remarkable book, precisely because it helps us understand how terrorism can happen anywhere. The parallel lives of the perpetrator and his victims raise a chilling question. How does someone transform into a calculated killer while appearing so ordinary to those around them? Anders was born into a fractured family. His diplomat father called him a fine boy, while his mother deemed him abnormal. When Anders was 6 months old, his mother Wench left London for Oslo, divorcing his father and separating them for 3 years. Wench carried deep childhood trauma. Orphaned as an infant, she later faced a reclusive mother who blamed her for contracting polio and suffered abuse from her half-brother. By 12, she had contemplated suicide. This trauma influenced her relationship with Anders, whom she found unmanageable. When he was 2, she sought help from social services, reporting that he would hit her, cling to her at night, and constantly demand attention. At 13, Anders sought identity through graffiti, choosing the tag Morg, a Marvel character who betrayed his race. Unlike his wealthy peers, he adopted immigrant slang and style, wearing Nike shoes and baggy clothes while trying to fit in with East End taggers, viewing immigrant gangs as more authentic than Norwegian youth. His social facade crumbled after breaking graffiti rules and allegedly informing on others. At 15, his father disowned him following his third arrest. Anders turned to obsessive weight training, growing more isolated. Later, he abandoned his tagging past and joined the Progress Party, ironically, the main opposition to taggers. Despite claims of business success and political aspirations, his attempts at city council nomination failed. After his political failures and a brief stint selling fake diplomas online, Anders' life unraveled. A failed relationship and financial troubles forced him to move back to his mother's home at 27. He found escape in World of Warcraft through his character Anders Nordic. The game provided the meritocracy he desired, a world where dedication earned rewards and identity came from achievement rather than connections. Initially reserved, he became more sociable as he advanced, with fellow players describing him as cheerful and uplifting. Gaming consumed his life, with sessions stretching to 17 hours daily. After 5 years of isolation, his real-world prospects vanished while he remained immersed in the virtual world. He simultaneously discovered extremist websites featuring anti-Islamic content and white nationalist rhetoric, spaces that offered belonging while demanding nothing but passive consumption. His manifesto, largely plagiarized, blamed political correctness and cultural Marxism for Europe's decline. He attacked feminism and promoted Eurabia theory, which claimed EU leaders exchanged Muslim immigration for oil access. By 2003, his online posts had grown increasingly radical, prophesying civil war when Muslims became Norway's majority. Anders saw himself as justicious knight commander of a revived Knights Templar order, performing elaborate self-initiation rituals with candles, skulls, and swords. His manifesto detailed murder plans and categorized traitors into classes marked for death. He wrote with calculated friendliness, targeting potential sympathizers with tactical advice on disguise, combat training, and financing. His post-victory plans included establishing factories in low-cost countries to produce 10 or so blonde, blue-eyed children each, with research into artificial wombs to replenish the Nordic gene pool. While Anders plotted destruction, his future victims built meaningful lives. Simon Swab, a teenager from northern Norway, showed early leadership by establishing a local AUF branch, Labour Party's youth organization, at his secondary school, recruiting 80 members in 1 day. His passion for workers' rights led him to join a union at 16, even before having a job. Bano Rashid, a 15-year-old Kurdish refugee from Iraq, embraced Norwegian culture while honoring her heritage. She refused exemption from learning New Norwegian, the country's second official language, and wrote articles about immigration and women's rights. Her dream was to become Minister of Equality to liberate women from oppression. On July 22, 2011, Anders began his day methodically, preparing sandwiches, setting up a new modem, and readying his manifesto for distribution. He lied to his mother about going to a computer shop while she planned to make his favorite spaghetti bolognese for dinner. While Breivik prepared his attack, life on Utøya Island continued despite pouring rain. Young people like Bano and Simon explored the island, attended workshops, and listened to former Prime Minister Gro Harlem Brundtland speak about women's rights and equality. After detonating a bomb at government buildings in Oslo, Anders arrived at Utøya disguised as a police officer. For over an hour, he methodically hunted down young people across the island. When girls spotted him and called out, "Police, help us," he approached calmly, asking, "Which of you need help?" before opening fire. When police finally arrived and confronted him, Breivik surrendered immediately. Asked if there were others involved, he replied simply, "There is only me. There is only me." In the aftermath, Norway faced its darkest hour with remarkable dignity. Prime Minister Jens Stoltenberg delivered an emotional speech that became the nation's response to tragedy. "Our answer is more democracy, more openness, and more humanity, but never naivety." The following Monday, over a million Norwegians gathered in towns and cities across the country, carrying roses. In Oslo, more than 200,000 people assembled at the town hall square. The Crown Prince said, "Tonight the streets are filled with love," as the crowd sang the national anthem. Breivik received the maximum penalty allowed by Norwegian law, 21 years, with provisions for indefinite extension as long as he remained a threat to society. The trial itself became a testament to Norway's commitment to justice and rule of law, even for its worst offender. 2 years after the tragedy, victims' families found ways to heal. Simon's family built a mountain cabin, Simonstua, with help from friends and neighbors who volunteered materials and labor. Anders Christiansen's parents preserved their son's room, turning on his light each night, determined to keep his memory alive. Norway responded to July 22, 2011, not with vengeance, but with democracy, openness, and humanity. The survivors and families rebuilt their lives, finding meaning through loss and community support. Their journey shows how human resilience and compassion can triumph over hatred and violence, not through retaliation, but through preserving our shared humanity.